Reardon said slowly, looking off, not realizing that he was thinking aloud. At least, I've never accepted that other tenet. I've never felt guilty about making money. Francisco missed the significance of the first two words. He smiled and said eagerly, "You do see that it's the same issue? No, you'd never accept any part of their vicious creed. You wouldn't be able to force it upon yourself. If you tried to damn sex as evil, you'd still find yourself against your will acting on the proper moral premise. You'd be attracted to the highest woman you met. You'd always want a heroine. You'd be incapable of self-contempt. You'd be unable to believe that existence is evil and that you're a helpless creature caught in an impossible universe. You're the man who spent his life shaping matter to the purpose of his mind. You're the man who would know that just as an idea unexpressed in physical action is contemptible hypocrisy, so is platonic love. And just as physical action unguided by an idea is a fool's self-fraud, so is sex, when cut off from one's code of values. It's the same issue, and you would know it. Your inviolate sense of self-esteem would know it. You would be incapable of desire for a woman you despised. Only the man who extols the purity of a love devoid of desire is capable of the depravity of a desire devoid of love. But observe that most people are creatures cut in half, who keep swinging desperately to one side or to the other. One kind of half is the man who despises money, factories, skyscrapers, and his own body. He holds undefined emotions about non-conceivable subjects as the meaning of life, and as his claim to virtue. And he cries with despair because he can feel nothing for the woman he respects, but finds himself in bondage to an irresistible passion for a slut from the gutter. He is the man whom people call an idealist. The other kind of half is the man whom people call practical, the man who despises principles, abstractions, art, philosophy, and his own mind. He regards the acquisition of material objects as the only goal of existence, and he laughs at the need to consider their purpose or their source. He expects them to give him pleasure. And he wonders why the more he gets, the less he feels. He is the man who spends his time chasing women. Observe the triple fraud which he perpetrates upon himself. He will not acknowledge his need of self-esteem, since he scoffs at such a concept as moral values. Yet he feels the profound self-contempt which comes from believing that he is a piece of meat. He will not acknowledge, but he knows, that sex is the physical expression of a tribute to personal values. So he tries, by going through the motions of the effect, to acquire that which should have been the cause. He tries to gain a sense of his own value from the women who surrender to him, and he forgets that the women he picks have neither character nor judgment nor standard of value. He tells himself that all he's after is physical pleasure. But observe that he tires of his women in a week or a night, that he despises professional whores, and that he loves to imagine he is seducing virtuous girls who make a great exception for his sake. It is the feeling of achievement that he seeks and never finds. What glory can there be in the conquest of a mindless body? Now that is your woman-chaser. Does the description fit me? God, no. Then you can judge without asking my word for it how much chasing of women I've done in my life. But what on earth have you been doing on the front pages of newspapers for the last, isn't it, 12 years? I've spent a lot of money on the most ostentatiously vulgar parties I could think of, and a miserable amount of time on being seen with the appropriate sort of women. As for the rest, he stopped, then said, I have some friends who know this, but you are the first person to whom I'm confiding it against my own rules. I have never slept with any of those women. I have never touched one of them. What is more incredible than that is that I believe you. The lamp on the floor beside him threw broken bits of light across Francisco's face as he leaned forward. The face had a look of guiltless amusement. If you had a glance over those front pages, you'll see that I've never said anything. It was the women who were eager to rush into print with stories insinuating that being seen with me at a restaurant was the sign of a great romance. What do you suppose those women are after but the same thing as the chaser, the desire to gain their own value from the number and fame of the men they conquer? Only it's one step phonier, because the value they seek is not even in the actual fact, but in the impression on and the envy of other women. Well, I gave those bitches what they wanted. But what they literally wanted, without the pretense that they expected, the pretense that hides from them the nature of their wish. Do you think they wanted to sleep with me, or with any man? They wouldn't be capable of so real and honest a desire. They wanted food for their vanity. And I gave it to them. I gave them the chance to boast to their friends, and to see themselves in the scandal sheets and the roles of great seductresses. But do you know that it works in exactly the same way as what you did at your trial? If you want to defeat any kind of vicious fraud, comply with it literally, adding nothing of your own to disguise its nature. Those women understood. They saw whether there's any satisfaction in being envied by others for a feat one has not achieved. Instead of self-esteem, their publicized romances with me have given them a deeper sense of inferiority. Each one of them knows that she's tried and failed. If dragging me into bed is supposed to be her public standard of value, she knows that she couldn't live up to it. I think those women hate me more than any other man on earth. But my secret is safe, because each one of them thinks that she was the only one who failed, while all the others succeeded. So she'll be the more vehement in swearing to our romance, and will never admit the truth to anybody. But what have you done to your own reputation? Francisco shrugged. Those whom I respect will know the truth about me sooner or later. The others... His face hardened. The others consider that which I really am as evil. Let them have what they prefer, what I appear to be on the front pages. But what for? Why did you do it, just to teach them a lesson? Hell no, I wanted to be known as a playboy. Why? A playboy is a man who just can't help letting money run through his fingers. Why did you want to assume such an ugly sort of role? Camouflage? For what? For a purpose of my own. What purpose? Francisco shook his head. Don't ask me to tell you that. I've told you more than I should. You'll come to know the rest of it soon anyway. If it's more than you should, why did you tell me? Because you've made me become impatient for the first time in years. The note of a suppressed emotion came back into his voice. Because I've never wanted anyone to know the truth about me as I wanted you to know it. Because I knew that you'd despise a playboy more than any other sort of man. As I would, too. Playboy? I've never loved but one woman in my life, and still do, and always will. It was an involuntary break, and he added, his voice low, I've never confessed that to anyone. Not even to her. Have you lost her? Francisco sat looking off into space. In a moment he answered tonelessly, I hope not. The light of the lamp hid his face from below, and Reardon could not see his eyes, only his mouth drawn in lines of endurance and oddly solemn resignation. Reardon knew that this was a wound not to be probed any further. With one of his swift changes of mood, Francisco said, Oh, well, it's just a little longer, and rose to his feet, smiling. Since you trust me, said Reardon, I want to tell you a secret of mine in exchange. I want you to know how much I trusted you before I came here. And I might need your help later. You're the only man left whom I'd like to help. There's a great deal that I don't understand about you. But I'm certain of one thing, that you're not a friend of the looters. I'm not. There was a hint of amusement in Francisco's face, as at an understatement. So I know that you won't betray me if I tell you that I'm going to continue selling Reardon metal to customers of my own choice in any amount I wish, whenever I see a chance to do it. Right now I'm getting ready to pour an order 20 times the size of the one they tried me for. Sitting on the arm of a chair a few feet away, Francisco leaned forward to look at him silently, frowning for a long moment. Do you think that you're fighting them by doing it? He asked. Well, what would you call it? Cooperating? You were willing to work and produce Reardon metal for them at the price of losing your profits, losing your friends, enriching stray bastards who had the pull to rob you, and taking their abuse for the privilege of keeping them alive. Now you're willing to do it, at the price of accepting the position of a criminal, and the risk of being thrown in jail at any moment, for the sake of keeping in existence a system which can be kept going only by its victims, only by the breaking of its own laws. It's not for their system, but for customers whom I can't abandon to the mercy of their system. I intend to outlast that system of theirs. I don't intend to let them stop me, no matter how hard they make it for me. And I don't intend to give up the world to them, even if I am the last man left. Right now, that illegal order is more important to me than the whole of my mills.